Temperature at the speed of time. So that's the question I'd like to ask in the talk and provide a very, very, very partial answer in a specific context, namely thermal equilibrium in curved spacetimes. So let me tell you what's in the back of my mind when addressing this question of time and temperature. I found in different places of physics an intriguing relationship between a time scale and a temperature. One of these examples is the Unruh effect, where the situation is that of an accelerated observer in the Minkowski vacuum, so on flat space. But because of acceleration, the vacuum looks different to this observer as it looks from an inertial point of view, and it's actually thermal, and the temperature is given by the Hawking-Unruh temperature. And you can see here that the acceleration, when divided by c, provides a time scale. Of course, an accelerated observer has a natural time scale, and this is proportional to a temperature. A very different setting in which you have such a relationship between time and temperature is thermal equilibrium in flat spacetimes. So there, by the KMS condition, all correlation functions at thermal equilibrium turn out to be periodic when analytically continued to imaginary time. And the period of correlation functions is again proportional to temperature, and you notice that the relationship between the time scale, A over C here, and tau here, and temperature is the same, with the same factor of 2 pi. So those are different physical situations in which you happen to have a linear relationship between a time scale and a temperature. An even different situation where you have such a thing appearing is in the context of Euclidean quantum gravity, or Euclidean gravity in Ashtekar variables, in a paper by Smolin and Su, where it's shown that you can define a time function over the configuration space of Euclidean gravity, namely Ashtekar connections, and interpret this time function as, first of all, as being a topological invariant of those three connections, namely the Chern-Simons invariant. And also you notice that you also have such a phenomenon of periodicity in this time, and the relationship is again the same. So different physical situations, accelerated observers in flat space-time, thermal equilibrium in flat space-times, quantum gravity in Ashtekar variables in the Euclidean setting. In all these cases, you see that there is a relationship between time scales and temperature. What's in the back of my mind is this time-temperature relationship. I'd like to understand it in a somewhat more general way. So that's just the background. I'm not going to talk about any of these effects. What I'll do is wonder whether I can go ahead and genuinely think of temperature as the speed of time, in some sense, and argue that it's actually useful to think in those terms in the context of thermal equilibrium in stationary spacetimes. So in other words, in spacetimes that have gravity but still are stationary. So more specifically, what I'll do is introduce a notion of thermal time, which was defined by Alain Cohn and Carlo Rovelli, and use it to derive the so-called Tolman effect, which is surprising and not always known, and it states that temperature is actually not a constant in space at thermal equilibrium in the presence of gravity. So let me tell you something about this Tolman effect, so it's a bit clearer what I want to talk about. Imagine a column of gas, and on the surface of the Earth, a vertical column of gas. From a non-relativistic perspective, you'd imagine that at thermal equilibrium, temperature is the same everywhere. And if it happened not to be the case that the temperature is the same, you would have a diffusion process, and this would get you back to a situation of homogeneous temperature. Now, in the presence of gravity, the situation is not this. There's a very small relativistic effect, which was noticed by Tolman in 1930, and which says that temperature at equilibrium is actually a function of the is actually proportional to the inverse of the lapse function here. So G00 is the metric, is the time-time component of the metric in stationary coordinates. So there's a relationship constraining the variation of temperature in space, but all in all, it's not a constant anymore. So if you go to the Newtonian limit to get some intuition for this temperature variation, you find that the gradient of temperature, the relative gradient of temperature, is actually given by the acceleration of gravity divided by c squared. So let me emphasize that this is not a strong effect. It's a very small effect on the surface of the Earth. This number here is 10 to the minus 18 per centimeter. So it's very small. But still, it's there. And it's the case that in such a situation, the lower, the hotter. This is the Tolman effect. It's well known. It's old. And there are various derivations of it.
As far as I know, there isn't.
I'm not aware of one. Maybe there is, but I don't. You see, in earthly experiments, you have 10 to the minus 18 per centimeter, so it's very small. I don't know of any experiments that measures this. But it's just based on general relativity, so it's something you can believe in, even though it's very small.
Coordinates in space-time so that the determinant of the metric is constant, like 1.
Uh-huh.
So how does that affect? Why should a change of coordinates of space-time coordinates be represented by a change of temperature?
So
this is not the determinant of the metric, right? This is the time-time component of the metric. So it looks coordinate dependent in this way. What I said is, this is the expression in a special set of coordinates that's stationary. So if I were to express it in a non-coordinate dependent way, I would just say that this is the norm of the time-like Killing vector that's there in my stationary spacetime. It's the same. This is just the coordinate expression of this norm.
Anything else in thermal equilibrium is the same.
Right. So that's exactly what I'm about to say. The derivations of this relationship here, so far, the ones I could find in the literature, are constructive. They depend on the details of the dynamics of the fluid that we use to derive this. Eventually, the temperature relation is always the same, but to make sense of it, to derive it, you need to say something about the dynamics of the matter that's there.
So more precisely, the way it's usually done is by obviously starting from a characterization of thermal equilibrium, because it's not the case that every thermodynamical state is at equilibrium. But when you are at equilibrium, you should derive this. So what does it mean to be at equilibrium in the presence of gravity? Well, let's get back to the non-gravitational case, and let's think of the characterizations we know of thermal equilibrium. There are many. One of them, of course, is the thermodynamical one, which is just Kelvin's second law. You say that if you are in contact with a source that's at thermal equilibrium, then you cannot extract any work from this. There's an information theoretical characterization, which is just saying the state representing thermal equilibrium is the one which maximizes the Shannon entropy. There's a dynamical characterization saying that the state should be stable with respect to perturbations of the Hamiltonian. This is something which is less known. I did not know about, but it's explained in the book by Hogg on quantum field theory. Better known is the stochastic condition for thermal equilibrium, where you say that there are microscopic probability fluxes in the system, and at thermal equilibrium, they balance each other. This is the condition of detailed balance. There's an analytical condition for thermal equilibrium relating to continuating time to imaginary time and having this periodicity condition I mentioned at the beginning. This is called the KMS condition. This is useful in quantum field theory. Those are more used in standard thermodynamics or statistical mechanics. The point is, all of them neglect gravity. None of them takes gravity into account. So I cannot use any of those directly to make sense of Tolman's law. Extensions, of course, of the notion of thermal equilibrium have been proposed, starting from Tolman, and others have been proposed as well, to make sense of thermal equilibrium in the presence of gravity, provided it's stationary. All of them, though, use as a key input the Einstein relation between energy and mass, which says that heat is weight and therefore falls in a gravitational potential. So they use this input and a further input which depends. If you read Tolman's first article, the one with Ehrenfest in 1930, there's a further dynamical input, which is actually the Einstein field equations and an equation of state relating temperature to the pressure of radiation fluid, for instance. He assumes the thermal fluid to be radiation, uses the equation of state and the field equations to get the relationship for temperature. Other accounts have been given in the Landau and Lipschitz book, or in a little bit earlier by other authors, using a thermodynamical input, namely defining temperature as the variation of entropy with respect to energy, and using the fact that energy weighs. A later derivation uses the notion of a relativistic Carnot cycles, where a machine is moved in space-time, comes back to where it was in space, and by using standard thermodynamic arguments, derives the Tolman condition again. All of them, and this is my main point, are constructive accounts of the Tolman effect. They rely on saying something about the kinematics or dynamics, or both, of the thermal fluid that's being at equilibrium. But this is not very much in the flavor of thermodynamics, where you have more usually principle derivations of statements. You don't, in thermodynamics, you try and say as little as possible about the system and try and use general principles to derive identities. So in this case as well, one would want a principle derivation of the Tolman relation, and in particular, one that would not perhaps rely on E equals mc squared. And I would like to argue in this talk that there is one. This first principle that we need to derive this is this one, that temperature should be thought of as being the speed of time. So this provides a principle from which one can derive the Tolman relation, and which in itself is instructive about the relationship between time and temperature. Now, of course, I claim this as such. It makes no sense. I should be very precise about what I mean with speed of time. And in particular, I should introduce two notions of time to make sense of the speed of one with respect to the other, because velocities are always one thing with respect to another. So to make sense of this principle I want to argue in favor of, I should be very precise about time and times. Sure.
As being what is one over these ds by dE, or?
So this is how it's defined in the Landau book.
Yeah.
And from this, and this argument here, and other arguments as well, the Tolman relation can be derived.
Okay.
I want to define it in a different way, at the speed of time. So let me talk about time now, and times. So let's get back and come back to non-relativistic physics to see what status times has there. I'd like to argue that it's useful to think of time, even Newtonian time, as being two things at once. The one thing is the time of dynamical equations, like the Newton equation, the Hamilton equation, where you have a time-reversible differential equation. And this time I'd like to call mechanical time. And a different time, which is the one entering the time-irreversible PDEs that there are in physics, like the heat equation. And I'd like to call this thermal time. Of course, they coincide in Newtonian physics, but I'd like to think of them as being two different things, really, which just happen to coincide. And I would think, perhaps, although I haven't explored this much further, that distinguishing them perhaps could ease the standard paradoxes of statistical mechanics, the Loschmidt and Zermelo paradox about the reversibility. If we are clear that we're talking about two conceptually different notions of time, which happen to coincide, maybe we can talk about these things in a cleaner way. Anyway, there are two notions of time: mechanical time for mechanical equations, thermal time for thermodynamical equations. Now, when you go to relativistic physics, this coincidence breaks down, of course. Already in special relativity, mechanical time is something that transforms from frame to frame by Lorentz transformations, but that's not the case of thermal time, because to have equilibrium, you need a bath, and the bath is something that breaks Lorentz invariance. So mechanical phenomena are Lorentz covariant, thermodynamical phenomena are not. And so you have a difference already in status with respect to special relativity. If you move to curved spacetimes, then mechanical time, which is the same as proper time along timeline curves, is something which is local in space. If you go to different places in space, the ticking of clocks becomes different. So mechanical time is something which is local and metric dependent. And it's not clear at all at this point what thermal time should be. And if you go to full general relativity, where the background space-time is itself fully dynamical, then there is no obvious notion of mechanical time, even though you can discuss some of them, like Chern-Simons time. There's no obvious or concessional one, and it's still not clear what thermal time should be. So the coincidence of mechanical and thermal time breaks down, and one should think again about what thermal time is to make sense of thermal time in this context.
If I write the Einstein equations in a Hamiltonian form, there are lots of d by dt's.
Right, so none of them
is that neither.
This is neither of the times. It's not, I wouldn't call this mechanical time because it's not something which is related to observability,
to obvious mechanical equations. Of course, you can write the evolution of the three metric in certain times, but there are many of them, and none of them is favored. So I would tend to think of as something different, something which is not observable, something different from mechanical time, which would be on a background proper time along a geodesic. It's something we can obviously argue about. You could say it's not the case that there is no mechanical time in GR. There are many, many mechanical times. Fair enough. I'd like to say fair enough.
What about the configuration system, some kind of proper time? Anyway, it's not going to play a role in what you're...
You would have to explain precisely what the metric on superspaces and everything. It's something else. So this is a quotes note. No mechanical time, or many mechanical times, or no obvious one is something to be weakened. Okay. So let's step back and try and introduce thermal time in general relativity, because we don't know what that is a priori. There is a proposal for a notion of thermal time in general relativity by Rovelli and Kohn, and it's based on this intuition. At least that's the way I understand it. I said thermal time is the time that should enter thermodynamical equations, like the heat equation, out of equilibrium phenomena. So the passing of thermal time should really be associated to the ignorance of the microscopic state of the system. Indeed, if you think of diffusion, if you knew the microscopic state of the system, you would not see any diffusion. There wouldn't be any heat equation, just Brownian motion of particles. So you wouldn't be in the presence of a genuine thermal time situation. So thermal time is something that should be associated to the ignorance, really, of the full microscopic dynamics. And this is, of course, in physics represented by statistical states on a phase space. Therefore, thermal time is something that should be induced by a statistical state. It's not something geometrical. It's something that depends on the description of the system. It's something that's statistical in nature. So that's the basic intuition for defining thermal time in a precise way. The definition that's proposed by Rovelli and Kohn is the following. If you have a system, be it relativistic or not, that's described by a Poisson manifold, a phase space with Poisson brackets, and a set of constraints, then a statistical state which commutes with the constraint defines a time flow by taking just the Hamiltonian vector field of this function of rho. So you have a system, be it relativistic or not, you have a state for the system, you consider this function here and the Hamiltonian vector field of this on this manifold there, and this is a flow of a vector field on the surface, and you want to call this the thermal time flow induced by the state rho.
Any positive functional on your phase space?
Right, so there are conditions.
This function should not be completely singular on a point. Otherwise, you're not going to make sense of it. So it should be a smooth function with a certain spreading. And these conditions can be made precise in terms of phase full states. So not just any state. If you take a delta function somewhere, you're not going to make sense of this. It should be spread.
So
in the loose sense that it should not be a delta function to begin with. No, this the condition is in terms of faithful state, and I cannot tell you it in detail.
But here you're at the classical level. So
for this definition here to make sense mathematically, what you would need is rho to be never zero. So a positive function with unit integral. that never vanishes. Then you can derive this argument. That's what I mean. But then I want to mean more physically. I want to say this is genuinely a statistical state that has some spreading in the sense that there is some ignorance. That's what I'm trying to input. Okay, so the mathematical condition is the non-vanishing of this function. Physically, I would like to think of raw as describing a statistical distribution of over states. So this is not precise. So then let's step back and just think of the mathematical condition, if this is more satisfying to you. Is that all right with you?
Like the constant, I mean, if I have a compact phase space, then the rho equal constant is a good statistical state of maximal ignorance.
Right.
But you're not thinking about that.
So
this the time would be zero.
Yeah, the vector field would be zero. And it would not have an interpretation. Again, what I'm going to say is
total ignorance, the Liouville state.
Yeah, no, okay. So
that's the standard state in the phase space.
So let me answer to this question in this way. Mathematically, the thing makes sense in the condition I gave. Physically, it doesn't, but in fact, that's what I'm about to say. The thermal time flow is not meaningful for any state, or at least not in any obvious way, but it becomes very useful in a certain context where you have equilibrium. So this abstract notion of thermal time, which looks so loose as such, becomes useful in a specific context. Okay. And in fact, you can use this notion to characterize thermal equilibrium. So there's a well-defined mathematical notion which physically would not be meaningful if this state is not a physically interesting state. But if it is, then it becomes useful.
If rho is h over is beta h, then maybe log of rho is h times beta, and the flow is going to be the temperature. But that's not what you mean. There's more than that.
Or that's so.
It's in a normal class of rho you're thinking of.
So what I'm going to say
is Hamiltonian, then yes, the relative.
Yeah. So if you're in non-relativistic mechanics, then and this is the actual Hamiltonian, then what you get is the usual time flow. What I'm going to say is, if you go to Kerr space times, you still get something which is interesting, which is still proportional to mechanical time, but then the temperature is going to be space dependent, and this is how you're going to get the condition for Coleman effect. But this is jumping ahead. I'm about to describe this. No, I'm going to say, if I focus on thermal equilibrium in Kerr space times, then I can use this notion to make sense of temperature and derive the Coleman condition. Okay, so this is the general notion of thermal time that was introduced by Hovelli and Kohn to be relevant for quantum gravity. I don't want to talk about this. I want to talk about a more specific situation, which is thermal equilibrium in the presence of gravity. Okay, I'm using this notion, which is general and abstract, and I wanted to apply it to one specific situation, thermal equilibrium in the presence of gravity. I want to study this.
I mean, this ensemble is a virtual ensemble that refers to our ignorance of the system, is what you said.
Yes.
So it's not a real ensemble. It's not a description of a real system. The real world or the real system is one individual element of this ensemble. So then this notion of time, which is defined by the probability distribution of the ensemble, is a function of the knowledge of the observer. It's not a physical property of the system.
Right. So this is extra baggage. This is the interpretation I would like to attribute to this on the basis of a certain interpretation of probability in statistical mechanics.
Good.
But you can think about this. And, yeah. So that's the way I think about it. But I understand it's extra baggage. It's interpretation of probabilities that we're discussing here. So if the system is not the whole universe, but an actual system that can be used many times, and you want to think of probability as frequencies in these actual ensembles, then you can think of this raw in this sense. It's fine. So I want to say, if you have various interpretations available for the state in terms of ignorance or ensembles or frequencies or whatever, pick the one you like and do statistical mechanics with it. Just consider this function.
I have in mind. In ordinary statistical mechanics, Einstein and Gibbs and so forth at the very beginning talked about the equivalence of ensemble averaging and time averaging. And the ensemble average was supposed to be a stand-in for what they really were thinking was happening, which was time averaging of some Brownian motion in the configuration space. Okay. So if you're making use of that conceptually, there's already a notion of time implicitly in the ensemble, which is the time averaging that the ensemble averaging implicitly refers to.
Right. So I'm not referring to any ergodic principle here. If I'm taking this ignorance interpretation, then there's no ergodic principle involved, right?
Right, but then your thermal time is not a property of an individual system. It's a property. It could change. Its properties could change if our state of knowledge of the system changes.
Yes, that's my interpretation of it.
You're happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. But I would like to emphasize that if someone else wants to have a different interpretation of probabilities, it's viable, also.
But let's talk about it again when you come to derive the Tolman effect, because that's not a prediction about our state of knowledge about the system, that's actually a prediction.
Yeah, let's come back to this at the end of the talk. If you're happy with this, let's come back.
Okay.
An aside, there is a quantum version of this in von Neumann algebras instead of Poisson manifolds, and this is interesting to mathematicians. It's called the Tomita modular flow, and it was used by to classify von Neumann algebras. So this is to say that this discussion here could be quantum, just like it's classical here. I'm focusing on the classical case to make it simple. So an example of this is obviously the one you gave, Laurent, namely the one of a Gibbs state for a non-relativistic system. Then, by construction, I would like to say the thermal time flow is the same as the Hamiltonian time flow up to a scaling which is beta. So this then sounds a bit trivial. I would like to take this identity here in this limit case as pointing at something interesting, namely the role of temperature in this relation. This identity between thermal time and mechanical time up to a temperature is in fact what characterizes thermal equilibrium. And the temperature here, or the inverse temperature beta, sets the relative scale of thermal time with respect to mechanical time. So this is what I call pictorially the speed of time. So I'd like to use this relation here, which is true for a Gibbs states, which are well known in non-relativistic physics, to characterize thermal equilibrium in the presence of gravity, which is a more general situation. Yes. I'm at thermal equilibrium.
Canonical example. You are not isolated, you are in contact.
So that's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to move back to curved space times and use this identity between mechanical and thermal time to characterize thermal equilibrium. So that's what I said. From this identity, I can read that thermal time is the same as mechanical time up to beta. But to make sense of this in curved space times, there's something I should do,
namely realize that mechanical time is something which is defined on space time as being proper time along time-like curves, and thermal time is a flow on phase space. So I cannot directly translate this into an identity for curved space time. There's something I should do. And this thing I should do is a way to replace this flow on phase space by a flow on space time. Okay, replace the Hamiltonian vector field in the phase space by the four velocity along stationary world lines. So this connection between phase space and space-time is provided by a class of observables on the system which are the local observables. Those are the ones that are defined in the neighborhood of a space-time point X. So an example of this is the density of a gas about the space-time point X. Here and now, what's the density of the system? This is a local observable. So if I use local observables, I can go from phase space to space-time via the dependence on the space-time point X. And using them, I can now make precise the criteria for thermal equilibrium in terms of thermal time.
So if you want a mathematical physics version of this, then you can think of the net of local observables in the sense of things that are localized in space-time, that are a support somewhere in space-time. Okay, but I'm happy with a physical definition like this.
Which is what? Where is your definition?
I have a system. There are measurements I can make. Some of them pertain to the state of the system here and there and now. And others are global. So the density of the gas here and now, that's what I would like to call a local observable.
Yeah. So how do you use that to go from phase space to phase time?
Because this, this observable here is attached to a space-time point x. It's parameterized by a space-time point x. This question I'm asking about the density of the gas is attached to the point x. And I can change this point x, and I'm going to change the observable.
Okay. So maybe, okay, I'm just asking. If you have a vector field on phase space, you want to make a vector field on space-time, what mathematical thing do you use?
I'll propose the criteria now, and you can tell me if you understand it and like it or not. I'm trying now to make precise in the context of Kerr space time the notion that thermal time is the same as mechanical time. Thermal time, as being applied on a phase space function that's local in space time, should be the same as the Lie derivative with respect to a vector field on space time of this function here, the Lie derivative being understood with respect to this x here. Moreover, for thermal time to be compatible with mechanical time, this variation should be along some time-like Killing vector. So this is the first condition. The second condition is the one about temperature. It says that this Killing vector that's induced by thermal time on local observables should just be beta times mechanical time. Here, this is the forward velocity along a stationary world line. And these two criteria is what I take as the precise, or roughly precise, maybe, meaning of the statement that at equilibrium, temperature is the speed of time. Thermal time induces on local observables a variation which is the same as the variation with respect to this point x. And this variation is compatible with the stationary structure of space-time. So this is a time-like Killing vector that I have. And its norm is related to temperature in this way, according to the principle that temperature should be the ratio of thermal to mechanical time. Then if I use this set of criteria.
Are you in contact with any kind of thermal bus here, or are you in contact with a bus, or it's, what do you mean exactly by equilibrium?
What do you mean by?
Equilibrium.
This is what I define as equilibrium. I will say that Ra is a state describing thermal equilibrium. Conditions hold. I am characterizing thermal equilibrium in terms of thermal and mechanical time. And from this, it's obvious how I can derive the Tolman relation just by noting that if I take the norm of this identity, saying thermal equals beta mechanical time, I'm getting that T is proportional to the inverse of the norm of this vector here, the Killing vector. Of course,
this forward velocity here is of norm 1 because I'm taking S as proper time. And this is the Tolman relation because, as we said before, the norm of the Killing vector is the same thing as square root G00 in coordinates that are adapted to this Killing vector. The point is this derivation of the Tolman relation makes use of no dynamical or kinematical input except this principle that time and temperature are related according to the way I introduce them.
That the Killing vector field is an Hamiltonian vector field. And
this is a Killing field on space-time.
Yes, but your first condition before was that this is a Hamiltonian vector field. No?
A is a function on phase space labeled by a space-time point. This is a vector field on phase space, so this is the variation of this in phase space. So I'm saying this maps to a variation on space-time with respect to this x here. So the variation on phase-space can be translated.
It's a function on phase-space?
It's an observable.
So it's a function on phase-space?
Yes.
So how does
labeled
it
by x.
How does it act on p? What is the action of a Lie derivative acting on
So the Lie derivative is with respect to this space-time point here, with respect to x. Here is a vector field on phase-space, which becomes, by this condition, mapped into the variation of this observable here with respect to x.
So this correspondence depends heavily on what A is and how spread it is. And
yes, so this should hold for all the local observables that are labeled by a space-time point X.
All, you mean?
Yeah, the local observables. I should, if I apply thermal time variation on local observables, what I should see is the same local observable, but in a different place or a bit later.
Is that obvious that this is true for any Killing vector field?
No, I'm saying there exists a time-like Killing vector field, which corresponds to the variation with respect to thermal time.
Sorry, if I have a metric, I know what my Killing vector field is.
Yes.
Time-like.
Yes.
So now I can check for this Killing vector field whether this condition is satisfied or not.
No. I want to say, I know because my space-time is stationary that there is one.
Here's one. Let's pick this one.
Right. No, I don't want to pick this one. I want to say that this variation here happens to be of the time-like Killing form.
But the Killing vector field is fixed.
But there could be many. I'm saying.
What do you mean there could be many?
There are space-times that are various Killing.
Suppose I take space time where there's only one.
Okay.
Stationary. There's only one Killing vector field.
Okay. Then this one should be exactly like this one. Wait. This variation with respect to thermal time should match the variation of AX with respect to X along time-like Killing.
But is it always possible?
Is how is it possible to be otherwise if space-time is stationary?
If this state here induces a very funny thermal flow, this is the condition for this state to be at equilibrium. So if I'm at equilibrium, intuitively, thermal time is the same as Killing time. That's the notion. But this is a criterion for raw. I could pick a raw that's not an equilibrium state that induces a funny Hamiltonian vector field here that does not correspond to variation in Killing time. So I'm saying thermal equilibrium is reached by this raw when thermal time is the same as Killing time. And I'm making this sort of precise with this condition. And the derivation is straightforward. And the picture for understanding what's happening is the following. This is a space-time diagram, but it's upside down from what we usually see. This is the height, the vertical direction, and this is time. In a stationary time volume here, instead of being stationary. So at various heights along a stationary world line, so if I'm a stationary observer following the integral curves of the Killing field, the four velocity is this, and it's always of norm 1. But the norm of the vector field psi, the Killing vector field, is different in different places in space. And because the norm is different, temperature is going to be different, because temperature is the ratio of this to this. And that's why you go the lower, the slower, and the hotter. So let me conclude at this point, just saying that this argument shows that, first of all, well, there is a notion of thermal time in general relativity. That's the one of Kohn and Rovelli. When it specializes to stationary spacetimes as opposed to just arbitrary states in arbitrary configurations of quantum gravity, when specialized to stationary spacetimes, it yields a natural and minimalist characterization of thermal equilibrium, one that's not constructive, that does not depend on assumptions about the dynamics, just based on the principle that where time runs slower, temperature is higher. And this is what's expressed by the Tolman relation. And I would like to think that this sheds some new light on the rather elusive time-temperature relationship that is there in physics in various places, the Henry effect, the KMS condition. And it's also there, I'd like to present as a joke, in other disciplines as well. So it's not just in physics. In biology, there's such a thing as the thermal time hypothesis. And it refers to the widely observed linear relationship between development rates of insects and plants and things with respect to temperature. So here are two plots. Those are crops, those are insects. And you can see here the development rate as a function of temperature. So it's sort of indeed linear until the thing dies because it's just too hot. And there is the same thing. On a more limited range of temperatures, you see the growth rate of insects to be
linearly dependent on temperature. So here's my joke. For crops and insects too, temperature is the speed of time. If you were to use insects as a clock, then it would be actually true that temperature is the speed of time. But this is just a joke. I don't want this to be serious. And it does apply. In fact, I am aware of results which say that both in Inuit populations and tropical populations, it's been observed that puberty is attained earlier when temperature is higher. So I'm not sure if this is exactly linear in the same sense as what I said, but it is true. It is true.
So there's something deep to this time-temperature relationship. I'd like to think. I'm not sure exactly in this sense. But, right, that was my conclusion. Thank you very much.
So we do have time for a lot of questions. So,
To what extent is your result a characterization of thermal equilibrium? That is, presumably, if rho is such that the Hamiltonian vector field associated with its logarithm does not coincide on such observables with the killing time, then you would not say that the distribution, so this is a thermal distribution not of the gravitational field but of matter, some matter on the background space-time, and
yes.
Then you would say that the matter was not in equilibrium with the space-time.
As opposed to within itself?
I suppose, well, it would fail to be you're looking for two things. One is you're looking for a notion of equilibrium. Your notion of equilibrium is that the Hamiltonian vector field taken from the log of the probability distribution on phase space coincides on local observables with the killing time. Right. And that, or is proportional to a killing time, and that kind of means, quote, it's not changing in the one notion of, in the same notion of time within which the space-time is not changing.
Yes.
And then the constant proportionality you're taking to be the temperature and then deriving the Tolman relation from that.
Yes.
So it sounds very cool, but to what extent is it a result by definition, and to what extent might it have been otherwise?
It's a result by definition if you take this as a definition of thermal equilibrium. But there's more to this. Thermal equilibrium is a physical condition and not just a definition. So I'm trying to capture the physical condition of thermal equilibrium with this criterion. So mathematically, it's just indeed definition and proof of this thing. But my point is not so much to derive a common relation from suitable axioms than to capture the physics of thermal equilibrium, which is not definition dependent by a set of conditions that I can understand. So formally, my answer is formally, this is derivation by definition, but I'd like this to capture something of thermal equilibrium physically also. Not sure if I answered the question. I'm sort of defining thermal equilibrium to be this, but I propose that it captures something of actually the physics of thermal equilibrium.
So if you go far from equilibrium, you lose the thermodynamic notion of temperature, but there still could be a kinetic theory notion of temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not address the role of that from this derivation anyway.
No, this is limited to thermal equilibrium.
Okay.
But I'd be interested in knowing what happens close to equilibrium, of course.
Can I have a question?
Yeah.
So as far as I know, you don't have a notion of temperature for a microcanonical ensemble. So as long if you're not in contact with anything, you are completely isolated, you don't have a good notion of temperature. But you have a good notion of equilibrium.
You do. You have entropy and energy. You can vary one with respect to the other. That's the microcanonical definition of temperature. You see, it's like this question of ensembles is a bit like the KMS condition. You see the KMS condition of periodicity by using the Gibbs state in the canonical ensemble continuing and looking at periodicity. But then this KMS condition, you want to think, and you think, characterizes thermal equilibrium in not just in the canonical ensemble, but in general. So he, superficially, the KMS conditions is the canonical one, but in fact, it's a genuine one for a more equilibrium. The same here. You're thinking of the canonical ensemble because of this log function. It makes sense to me. And indeed, this seems to be based on the canonical ensemble. So the easy answer is, yes, this is limited to the canonical version of thermal equilibrium. I would like to think that it's more just like the KMS condition. It's not just the canonical ensemble, it's the actual condition for thermal equilibrium. Tim, did you have a question?
Well, it was kind of the second question that Lee asked. I would have just phrased it a little bit differently. Maybe.
Go ahead. Maybe I can understand that.
Yeah, I'm sure you can ask it better than me.
Well, maybe let's put it in different words. Can you give any particular example where, for example, one of the other definitions, for example, detailed balance, because that's what probably most of us understand as thermal equilibrium, would coincide with that? With your definition of sort of equilibrium?
I don't know, it's not obvious to make sense of detailed balance in the presence of gravity in curved spacetimes. So you have to have a sort of curved.
Well, but you still have a time like Killing vector field, so you start out with a tetrahedron, and you evolve the boundary of that tetrahedron with respect. To that time like Killing vector field, and then you look what goes in and out through the surfaces. So I think that is local and gives the notion of.
Wait, the fluxes the fluxes of detailed balance are in the phase space, not necessarily in space time. So if you have a stochastic system, there's a space of all the states of the system, and the fluxes that you want to balance are in this space, fluxes between different states. Could be energy states, could be whatever. So while you're talking of evolution in space-time, so you're thinking of something which is really a diffusion process of something in space-time. And then if we...
Yes, that's what I'm asking for. Do you have...
So then I don't know. So my answer is one would have to specialize detailed balance to a space-time situation like you're doing and check. I'm not sure. But it would make sense to me that the two notions match. But this is something to be done. I don't think that there is a big literature on stochastic processes in space-time in the presence of curvature. So it would be something interesting to do. It's not something that's very widely studied, I think, because I looked for it and found not much. In fact, when I was thinking of generalizing thermal equilibrium to curved space-times, I had the same reaction as you. I said, well, look, there's detailed balance. It should be easy. Mm-hmm. It's something we can probably do, but we must do it. It's not known or discussed or
yeah, in particular.
Or what exactly would be the effect of gravity, of curvature on these fluxes is not something that's quite as obvious to me.
Yeah, but you certainly have a lot of simplifications because you have a time like Killing vector field. So you have a global Hamiltonian still that gives you time evolution. So a lot of the notion that you need.
Yeah, so
the conceptual setup is undisturbed by all the complications that we have in GR, where we have local.
So one would need to take into account the redshift effects that there are in the presence of gravitational potential, and one would write the Tolman effects.
But
this is something I haven't said.
They are in the definition of energy, right? Here, isn't it you're like in a deep situation? You have a preferred notion of energy, you have a preferred notion of mechanical time.
Sure.
So you're taking your rho to be exponential minus beta h.
What's beta? Now beta is space dependent, that's the point.
So maybe you have to,
you have to do something else. You can't just use beta h, because beta now is not a constant anymore. So it's still the case locally that beta is the thing that multiplies h.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's exactly the condition I'm using to characterize thermally. I'm making it local. This is a version of the local KMS condition, if you wish. You could frame the same discussion by saying what I've done was to localize the KMS condition
in the presence of a killing vector field. That's what I did, in short. So the one thing I should, I'll get to the question afterwards. The one thing
beta
I
is a function on space-time now. In your case, beta is a function on space-time.
Yes, and I'd like to know which one. For this, I should give a criterion. This criterion that is that the one I'm proposing is that locally it's just the rate of thermal time with respect to proper time. And when, as soon as I say this, I get the torment. So it is a function on space, and which one is characterized by this condition? Rob?
So I have two questions. The first question, early in your talk, you mentioned how non-relativistic theories of mechanical time same as thermal time, but that there were various paradoxes that question this, like you mentioned Loew Schmidt and Zermelo. So just wondering if you could tell us what those were.
So Zermelo raised an objection to the Poincaré recurrence theorem when it was published, saying, look, we never observe such recurrences in nature. The Poincaré theorem says that if you have a Hamiltonian system, because of the incompressibility of the uvial measure in phase space, you will have to eventually get back to where you started, to an arbitrary precision. This means that the state of whatever dynamical system you have will become what it was before at some later time. This is something that we don't observe and which seems to conflict with irreversibility. So that was Zermelo's objection to the Poincaré theorem. He says, look, it might be mathematically right, but it can't be physically right because of this. And then the answer came back that the actual timescale for Poincaré recurrence is so large that you don't actually have to worry about it. It's just a problem in principle. In practice, it's not a problem. It was a lively discussion in the early 20th century. And the Loew Schmidt paradox is a more general version of this, which involved Loew Schmidt in a discussion with Boltzmann, I think, where he said that, more in general, it should not be possible to derive irreversible macrodynamics or irreversible dynamics from reversible microdynamics. So it's not really a paradox. It's more a puzzle, and it's a puzzle that has been long-lasting. How can you get irreversibility from reversible microscopic dynamics? But that's the question Loew Schmidt asked to Boltzmann, and Boltzmann was convinced he had the answer to this question with his H theorem, which was still criticized for various reasons, and still today is not considered a definitive solution to the problem because there are assumptions in the H theorem. So those, more than paradoxes, are puzzles about the foundations of statistical mechanics, and they remain open. People discuss the foundations of statistical mechanics in that respect. And maybe the discussions could be slightly improved by distinguishing two notions of time. That's what I would like to propose.
And the second question was, you mentioned a lot of other phenomena, such as the Unruh effect, that relate to temperature and acceleration. And the question, do you have any idea, if you've got a principal theory approach to deriving the Tolman effect, and you'd expect that that principle ought to be powerful enough to derive other effects? So the other effects are quantum effects, but nonetheless, are there other phenomena in that long list that you supplied which your principle can be used to derive?
Not that I know. You gave the reason. Those are quantum effects. I said nothing. There's no H bar anywhere in my derivation. So I try to make it clear that I'm using the Unruh effect as a spiritual background for thinking about time and temperature, and not as being directly related to discussion. So my answer is no. I do not see any of those effects as being directly related to this. It's more a set of issues relating time and temperature that are on the table, and I would like to have a more unified vision for all of them. I don't have it yet. I'm just saying this. A local, specific context in which I can think about time and temperature, and it's useful in various ways. That's all I'm claiming.
So if there are not any more questions, let's send Mateo for the...
Thank you.